back to the Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again, as always, for listening this week. From downtown Miami to Palm Beach County, parks to airports, crowds have gathered voicing opposition to President Trump's immigration executive orders and other actions he's taken in just the first 2 weeks of his administration. It's activism that's rarely on display in this community in South Florida. Did you march in Bayside Park in Miami or maybe at Palm Beach Airport last weekend? Do you plan on showing up this weekend on Southern Boulevard near Mar-a-Lago as President Trump visits? What is it about these issues that has stoked some local activism? And what about Trump supporters in support of the president? Could these kinds of displays of civic engagement continue? 800-743-9576 is the telephone number to get engaged on your radio or online. 800-743-9576. Have your voice be heard. Tweet us at WLRN or find us on Facebook. Sergio Bustos with Politico, Tim Padgett with WLRN, Nancy Ankrum with the Miami Herald still continue with us. Nancy, you penned the editorial for the Miami Herald, I believe, that really put a spotlight on this question and had this observation. So why now? Why now this local activism, do you think?
I think that the stakes, people really see the stakes as high as they've seen them in their lifetimes. I think the threat of a dial back on certain freedoms, certain rights, even constitutional rights, has really energized people and so far driven them to the streets. That editorial also suggested, however, that marching can only go so far.
Right.
And at some point, people will march themselves out. That fire can't last, that, you know, that fire in the belly, that passion. And our question is, okay, what else are you going to do? If you take a look at some of the most successful protests, whether it was for women's liberation, whether it was for civil rights, yes, there was marching. But however, there was a lot of talking, of negotiating, often with the enemy behind stage. And that is where change really happens.
Yeah, Nancy, I think you just put your finger on it, negotiating with the enemy. I think in the long term, and my portfolio is Latin America, so I go back to the example of Venezuela, mm-hmm. and it's inverted. Here, you had the conservatives being toppled by Chavez, for example, as opposed to Trump toppling the liberals here. But the conservatives in Venezuela made an awful mistake. Even before Chavez was elected and then when he became president, they did an abysmal job of trying to understand Chavez's base, just as liberals in this country have done an abysmal job of trying to understand Trump's base. Sergio and I, just before the show, were discussing the book Hillbilly Elegy. I think aside from marching, Nancy asked, what else can they do? I think one of the things they can do is pick up that book.
Yeah.
Now, whether you agree with Trump's base or not, that's not really the point. But liberals have got to start understanding what drove this phenomenon if they're going to engage these people and reverse votes. Because at the end of the day, what it comes down to is votes.
Yeah, Sergio, when President Obama traveled to South Florida, as he did for Secretary Clinton during the campaign, as well as elsewhere, and he would talk about then candidate Trump and talk about some of the policies he's spoken about, and you would ultimately hear some in the audience boo, and the president would always take a step back, pull up from the microphone, and he'd say, don't boo, vote.
Obviously, I think a good number of people took up his advice, but an even larger number of people didn't. I think
right.
The number was...
we had about 70% turnout in right. South Florida, 71% in Broward County at a high, and Palm Beach County, 74%.
Yeah, nationwide, I read the stat that 43% of all eligible voters, people that could have registered and voted, along with those who could have just voted because they were already registered, was 43%. I mean, and that equated to 100 million people.
Yeah,
I think it's... You know, what I think this administration is going to test is really the U.S. Democratic system, because already you're seeing with these executive actions, the lawyers are going to court over this, and it's going to, you know, there's a check and balance on
right.
the government.
Right.
Will the court system, how will they view this? And, you know, if people didn't think there's much at stake, or it's hard to believe because it was all laid out in front of people, whether it's a Supreme Court nominee, whether you want a conservative or liberal. It was sitting there waiting for you to make a decision as a voter. Hopefully it is a wake-up call, though I think, you know, you have the privilege in this country of taking part in democracy. It's whether or not, as Nancy says, going to march is one thing, voting and keeping up
right.
on all this information and what's going on is another.
Right. And Nancy, you know, to that point, the demonstrations that we have seen for the Women's March, the airport demonstrations last weekend, the demonstrations last week and this week at Government Center in Miami, and some of the smaller demonstrations at the local offices of elected officials, while there has been certainly a groundswell, it is not moving mountains, right? In other words, we're talking about a protest of a few dozen to a few hundred people, maybe a few thousand in the case of the Women's March, in an area of 6 million people.
It's not moving mountains. However, it is very early in the process.
Yeah.
And the people who really do want to bring about some change need to remain committed. As I said, marching will march themselves out. It is early. I think the activism and the engagement is to be admired, but they need a strategy.
They're also meteorologically advantaged because of the time of year here, certainly in South Florida.
Right.
Yeah.
yeah.
Let's go. I don't want to make light of it, but
it's not August.
It's not August. Exactly. Humidity levels are low. Let's go to Mitzi in Miami. She joins us on the Florida Roundup. Mitzi, welcome to the program. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for having me. I was wondering about the what you've seen in terms of immigrants who did vote for Trump and are kind of kicking themselves in the behind after they see a little bit more of their policies on, you know, especially immigration. And I'm thinking particularly of a Syrian family I know here in Miami who voted for Trump for various reasons, and now they are really upset. And I didn't know if you were seeing this, this kind of feeling from maybe Cubans or other groups.
Great question, Mitzi. We'll put that to our Cuba correspondent, so to speak.
Great question, Mitzi. And I think, I think you just hit the nail on the head in your last utterance there, the Cuban vote. I think it's going to be really interesting to see when you talk about immigrant communities, how Cuban Americans who went for Trump in November, how they're going to react to the fact that they may not be seeing much dividends with their vote. He really hasn't even uttered the word Cuba yet, let alone take on a lot of President Obama's normalization policies with Cuba that he promised them he was going to tackle, whether it be canceling diplomatic relations or stopping Americans from traveling so easily there. I don't think really from what we're seeing, a lot of that is going to manifest itself, and it's going to be really interesting to see how Cuban Americans here who voted for Trump are going to react to that.
And let's remember, there is that same generational breakdown that we saw in 2008 and 2012. And maybe an older generation of Cubans might have a one-issue philosophy when they go into the polling booth, but others don't. And let's remember, Hillary Clinton did win Miami-Dade County.
As well as Broward and Palm Beach County as well, right? And in fact, won all three counties with a vote margin, I think, of almost 750,000 votes. Donald Trump carried Florida with about 120,000 votes. So it was almost a million vote swing from South Florida to the rest of the state for the president. Let's go to line six in Fort Lauderdale. Brent is joining the roundup here. Brent, welcome. Go ahead.
Hey, how you doing?
All right. Your thoughts.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, I've been enjoying your conversation. I want to call in. I am a protester. I've been protesting Trump several times now, including the night of the inauguration in Fort Lauderdale. I was at the Women's March in Miami on the day after, and I'm going to be in Miami tomorrow. There's going to be a massive anti-Trump protest. Right now, all we can do is have our voices heard, because he basically campaigned on what I believe is a fascist, racist, sexist message.
Brent, let me ask you a question. Who do you want to hear your voice? Who's your audience?
Not only I want the Trump administration to hear my voice, but I also want people in Congress. I mean, there are three branches of government. Right now, he's issuing a whole bunch of executive orders, but that's only one branch of the government. The judicial branch has already weighed in on the refugee ban and found it illegal many times. Right now, the legislative branch is doing nothing. I mean, especially Marco Rubio has been dead silent for the most part. We want our elected representatives here in Florida to take notice. I mean, Trump is a minority president. He lost a popular vote by 3 million votes. He got killed in South Florida.
He did, but he won the electoral vote, and is you know, we don't need to re-adjudicate the electoral college. That's how the president is elected in the United States.
I understand he's the president, but he does not have the will of the people behind him. He has the lowest approval rating of anybody in office at this stage in the presidency, and he lost the popular vote. People are upset. And then he's come in doing what appears to be some sort of, I guess, shock and awe blitzkrieg, trying to terrify everybody by doing all these crazy racist executive actions, fascism. And, you know, we don't need to sit by and just let it happen. We can't vote for anybody until 2018 in November. So right now we need to have our voices heard. We want to let people know we're not happy with the outcome of the election. He only won because it was a low turnout election.
Not necessarily a low turnout election, historically speaking. Brett, but we hear you. We understand what you're saying. Sergio, go ahead.
Yeah, I appreciate the caller's passion, if you will. On the other hand, there should be no surprise in anything that Trump has done, because to his credit, he's not a politician. He laid out all these things that he's doing during the campaign. Right. Not once, not in a speech privately at some fundraiser. He laid it out over and over and over and over again. So I would argue that the time to vote was back in November, when you'd already heard the agenda that was coming forward. Now, that said, 2018 is just only 2 years away.
And the election cycle has already begun, for that matter. Siobhan is joining us from Hollywood. Go ahead, your thoughts.
Good afternoon. I was questioning what exactly the people who oppose Mr. Trump should be negotiating on. Should we just pick an issue, the bigotry, the discrimination, the lying to us? How should we negotiate with people who do that and do those actions? I find it very difficult to say we should negotiate behind the scenes, as Mr. Padgett in the editorial director of the Herald suggested. We don't make, but what do we negotiate on? And if we have any decency, should we not be sticking up for the people who've been discriminated against, the people who have lived in this country, for American citizens who are locked up at Port Canaveral and detained American citizens, for an 8-year-old who was killed in an ill-advised strike on Yemen?
Siobhan, we got it. Let's put that back to Nancy, because your question is well put after a comment that she made earlier in our conversation. Nancy, who for the protesters who are out on the streets, your recommendation was to negotiate. As Tim, you said the same thing. Nancy, you first.
Who
is the other party? Who is the opposition here that they should pull to the table?
The people who need to be pulled to the table. Yes, there are three branches of government. Focusing on your lawmakers in Congress and even your legislative lawmakers, because Trump's win has really freed a lot of state legislatures to do a lot of mischief regarding voting rights, regarding women's rights. You really need to keep your eyes open here. But yes, you really need to lobby that third branch of government, which is your representative, because a lot will not be done without Congress's say-so. I think that that people who have come together to protest the repeal of the Affordable Care Act probably have their act together, are a little more cohesive than some of the other people who are protesting the Muslim ban and women's rights and so on and so forth. But, you know, again, you know, I would suggest another book to read, Parting the Waters. It was about the civil rights movement. And take a look at the lawyers who were brought on board. You know, Thurgood Marshall didn't just land on the Supreme Court because he was a nice guy.
Far from it.
This has to really be approached almost like a business.
And Thurgood Marshall also understood the South and how to approach it strategically.
Exactly.
And we live in a liberal bubble in South Florida. But where is power in Florida? It's north of Lake Okeechobee. And I wonder how many of the protesters here in South Florida have really ever bothered to get to know people north of Lake Okeechobee.
Right.
And I think that because politics is about persuasion. It's not so much, I mean, Nancy and I said negotiated, but I think we were just throwing that out as a metaphor. What it's about is, how are we going to persuade, or how are liberals going to persuade Trump's base to rethink their phenomenon?
Sergio, your thoughts?
Yeah, real quick. You know, people may know Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. They may know Paul Ryan because they appear on TV all the time. And they obviously know President Trump. But go ahead and name the House Speaker, Richard Corcoran, here in
Florida.
Florida House Speaker. Go ahead and name some of the leaders here in the state. And and if you really do want to influence politics or legislation, you know, it happened already with right early on. Remember when Republicans in the House tried to really defang the Ethics Commission.
Right, right.
All their congressional offices got inundated with phone calls. That changed. They ended up backing off.
And the president pushed back on that as well.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I would also say that last week when the orders came down from Trump on refugees and immigrants and the idea that even green card holders, which I used to be one at one time, when they were told they could not come in and out of the country, again, there was a hue and cry from people in Congress. And the Trump administration backed off of it. Yeah. They walked it back on Monday.
I tell you what, though, Sergio, between your civics question and the book club that Tim and Nancy are trying to start here, we're going to have our homework every weekend here. Nancy Ankrum is the op-ed editor at our partner, the Miami Herald. Tim Padgett covers the Americas for us at WLR. And Sergio Bustos, the senior editor here in Florida for Politico. Thanks to all three of you
for joining us
on the Florida Roundup. We got plenty more to come. Stick with us. The financial fight taking shape in Tallahassee over how to spend your tax dollars. What's at stake for your paycheck and your pocketbook?